Brad Wheelis, ABC News.
This is Tony Pan. The forecast for tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies. There'll be a chance for rain showers. Low temperatures dropping into the upper 40s to around 50. Rain is likely on Monday, especially in the morning. It'll be breezy and cool with high temperatures only in the upper 50s. Still a chance for rain showers on Tuesday. Highs will be in the upper 50s and low 60s. A slight chance for showers on Wednesday. Still breezy and cool with high temperatures in the upper 50s. From the WCBM Weather Center, this is Tony Pan.
Radio 680 WCBM.
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
It's the last Sunday of the month, so it must be time for Zoe. Every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m., you'll find Zohara Hieronymus hosting 21st Century Radio right here on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Welcome to 21st Century Radio. Thank you to Paul and his band Wings and their song Eat at Home. We all want to eat at home, and some people are suggesting on the internet that we're going to have to grow our tomatoes in our closets and hide them from the federal government. And when I get emails like that, I get really curious, what's all the hysterics? So keeping in with 21st Century Radio's long history and our personal involvements, Dr. Bob's and mine, I'm Zoe. Welcome to the program. In the environmental movement together since 1969, tonight's show, like many of ours, is focused on current legislation, legislation that concerns food safety, farm processing, and other agricultural and health and safety issues. First, I want to thank, though, our executive producer, Laura Kortner, for arranging our guests this evening and gathering information for me. It is always a treat when a producer produces, after having spent many, many years producing all of my own programs from scratch. You know, as an activist and investigative broadcaster for over three decades, I have found one thing to be consistent. There are always, and it seems so logical, it's a silly thing almost to point out, but there are always opponents and supporters of all legislation. The art, though, is to find out why certain sides are taken. And this, of course, is the job of all of us as active citizens to discern truth from hype and good intentions at the cost of private rights. At least that's one thing I always look for. Some say follow the money. I say follow the Constitution. Tonight, professional consultants, activists, legislative representatives, and professional organizational directors join us to better understand current issues, including significant ones about either our independent autonomy as small farmers, biodynamic growers, gardeners, CSAs, etc., and larger institutional corporate farming. We're joined first by Steve Gilman of Rucky Tuck's Farm in Stillwater, New York. Steve has been an active organic farmer and participant or leader in positions of chair, board member, presidency of numerous organizations since 1976, as well as his long involvement since then in organic farming. And I'd say, Steve, with a CV too long to recite, it's apparent it's been a lifelong work of yours, and you now help others to do the same. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Well, look, why don't we begin with kind of a general question, because you've been organic, you've been involved in organic farming personally, as I mentioned, longer than most, since 1976. And how has the market for organic farms in general or organic foods changed over the years?
Well, I would have to say it's entered the mainstream. It's still a small percentage of that. But compared to the early days where fellow organic farmers were fewer and further between, the movement has really developed into a full-scale food system that's an alternative to the one that we're kind of used to.
And it seems that in all the things I've read and with all the guests we're going to have, whether Tony Corbo from Food and Water Watch or Judith McGreery from Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, is that the federal government in particular doesn't seem to distinguish between large-scale corporate agribusiness and small-scale independent farmers.
Well, I think that's true. One of the problems is that I think there are really two parallel food systems, and a lot of people, eaters, are very familiar with both of them. If you go to your supermarket, a lot of the food that's there really doesn't have a face connected to it. It's come from a long distance. It could be a foreign country very easily. And then there's the local food system that a lot of people are really turning to, and that's your farmer's market or community-supported agriculture group, a CSA, or a roadside stand. A lot of restaurants now are sourcing local food. So these two systems kind of exist side by side, but there's a tremendous scale difference. And one of the problems small-scale farmers have is when anytime any proposed legislation or any rulings come down that smacks of one size fits all, then there's an inherent dichotomy there that, first of all, doesn't treat the small-scale side of things fairly, and really shows very little understanding for the mechanisms that happen with farm direct food supplies.
Well, and of course, one of the primary instigators, I guess, of much of the reformation going on in the Obama, I guess one could say Congress, though it doesn't belong to him, it belongs to us, is that food safety has become a critical issue. And as you've pointed out in your wonderful writings on it, you know, it's the outbreak of the day syndrome, whether it's in peanuts or the scary spinach we had or the don't touch the tomatoes in 2008. Talk to us about why the legislation that's going on might be focused on traceability, but perhaps it doesn't really address the heart of the problem.
Well, you know, I think that we're all eaters, and food safety is a prerequisite for all sectors of the food system, and this is critically important. We, you know, our food, the very definition of food is nourishment, health. It's the very life we have, and so by definition, that should not be poison. And so what we've been faced with over the last decade in particular is the industrialized food system, which is centralized, and one field, say, in California can infect 26 states with a virulent form of E. coli and kill 8 people. We just have this system now where the risk has really gotten out of hand. And I think any time you have a situation that needs remedy, Congress is going to step forward and try and do something to take care of that. This is in the public arena. The public should be assured of having safe food. But
aren't there already state laws in place that can handle this without the federal government interfering? I mean, that has been a long, consistent theme of something we've examined over the last 3 decades, is what happens when a problem happens? It's interstate commerce, but there's state agencies in place that perhaps aren't beefed up enough, or the regs aren't sufficient enough with the change in the way the farming and distribution business is. But why the federal government?
Well, you know, I think you put your finger on it. A lot of smaller-scale farmers are actually pretty well regulated these days by state and local laws, and it governs everything from how they run their greenhouse to how they present their produce at a farmer's market. When you have interstate commerce going on a large scale where very centralized production can affect an incredible amount of people in many states around the country, then you have a different situation. And for states to be able to come in piecemeal with 50 different sets of rules to try and tackle this huge nationwide situation, that's kind of been at the basis of why the federal government has found itself involved to begin with.
Well, and of course, there are many bills. There's about five right now. And the one that has received the most hysterical attention online, as if to suggest all farms will be nationalized, even the local backyard gardener that might be listening and is waiting for the rain to stop in Maryland so we can get our tomatoes and everything in,
right,
is Representative DeLauro's bill, House Resolution 875. And people are saying, you know, it's going to constrain the small organic farmer. And later, Tony Corbo of Food and Water Watch will talk a little more in depth about it. But in terms of the way you look at things, the small farmer manages a farm very differently, as is logical to assume, than the large agribusiness, which relies heavily on chemicals, whether it's for the land or the animals, whereas the sustainable organic does exactly the opposite. And so the food systems are extremely different, and what's required require different applications. But that seems to me what nobody in Congress is addressing, and we mentioned that. But you had said there's some examples already of what happens in one size fits all, and you pointed to something called GAPS that were created in 2007, and I think it's for managing land for production in California as an example. Show us how, when even the best intentions go awry, what can happen.
Well, yeah, you touch on a very good point there, and I just want to throw out at the very beginning, just so we don't perpetuate any internet rumors any further, the DeLauro bill somehow became the target of an hysterical internet approach that actually was completely unwarranted. Our good sections of it were misinterpreted, and to be charitable, I think maybe the people who really started circulating rumors really felt that these rulings were targeted unfairly at small-scale farmers, but
Because it didn't specify, perhaps, that it wasn't in any great depth, that it's left to interpretation, and that's always the problem with federal legislation,
exactly,
is it's left to interpretation.
And we actually had meetings with Representative DeLauro's office and got them to make clarifications, and at the heart of it, they really totally exempted small-scale farmers. They were not interested in farm direct sales, which you would get at farmers markets, CSAs, roadside stands, any of those direct marketing where there is food with a face. You buy from a farmer, it is traceable, you know where it came from. The problems that Representative DeLauro was trying to address was really the overall food system that's fragmented into 15 different agencies. And the problem there is that there's no responsibility. The regulation has been gutted and gutted and gutted over the last 20 years, and the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has emerged really toothless in the face of the bigger businesses that are profiting by this kind of a system.
Well, one of the things, and I don't want to run out of time, I want to skip GAP for a moment, if you don't mind, because I think leafy greens, everybody in our audience who eats salad might have become accustomed to going to the grocery store and being able to buy these wonderful spring greens that are organic and all kinds of leafy greens that I understand is one of the largest parts now of the farming industry. And there's this voluntary agreement you mentioned of the National Leafy Greens in California. Describe for us the kind of impact this has had on small farmers, as well as you mentioned, community-supported agriculture and the guys that bring in their goods from the farm in their trucks to the market.
Yes, the problem is, and just touching on GAPS, that stands for Good Agricultural Practices, and these are a set of rulings that a lot of farmers could agree on. Hand-washing by people who pick the produce, just very basic good material. The problem is, when the outbreak happened with spinach in 2006, and many people were sickened and people died, the leafy greens industry, which is, as you say, one of the newest and biggest segments now of agribusiness, responded with really draconian laws among themselves. They drew up a marketing agreement that really are supposed to be voluntary, but they're only voluntary because anybody who wants to do business with these buyers who ship across the country really have to sign on to them.
So it's become like the old-fashioned guilds. You know,
exactly.
Either you play along with the rules or you don't get a contract. And yet it's so hysterically absurd. You want to talk about something to get hysterical about is until recent legislation, and it's not been passed, foreign imports, which because of the GATT and NAFTA agreements come in plentifully, even with dumping that takes place of product over our own, don't have to meet the same requirements as our own produce. I just
exactly.
don't get that at all.
And only 1% of what comes into this country from foreign sources is inspected by the FDA.
Right. So that's as insane as everything that comes in the containers, you know, offshore to our land. And we've seen this erosion of common sense when it comes to foreign import, but draconian, as you mentioned, sometimes to the citizen of the states.
Exactly. And so the problem with this marketing agreement is that now there's an effort to impose this upon the whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think, as you pointed out, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I remember one of the things I read in your great writing on it is that it was sort of like a massive burn technique of the lands and soils around crop.
Well, it was a sterilization approach, which runs completely counter to the organic approach of biodiversity,
right.
Providing our safety. And so in this case, they actually bulldozed strips 30 feet wide between fields, they drained ponds, they killed frogs.
All illogical.
Mice.
You're right. Kill the worms, kill the toads, bring
exactly.
in the sprays, and let's eat it afterwards.
Like it's like an irradiation approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the
same
ultimate
theme.
Solution. And
mm-hmm.
the problem with that is there was just a study put out in California that actually took samples from all these wild critters around and found less than 0.5% harbored any of that kind of virulent E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no science to back up that sterilization approach. But, again, you're correct. There's a hysteria because the leafy greens industry, during the baby spinach outbreak of
right.
E. coli, was losing $1 million a day.
So in closing, and we're going to continue these themes throughout the evening, and I hope our audience can stay with us, what would you suggest the audience does? What legislation do you find to be practical that's on the boards that each of us can, you know, perhaps encourage our representatives and senators to support?
Well, I think what's happening now is we're really scrutinizing everything that comes along. This is going through Henry Waxman's Energy and Commerce Committee, and we're going to really have to keep our eyes open in early June to see what emerges from there, because at this point, the DeLauro bill and all these other ones are going to go through a mixing process in committee, and at that point, we're going to have to really see what's going to be coming out of this. And at this point, there are small-scale farm groups all around the country poised, monitoring this, and ready to jump in. And I think the one thing that the kind of reaction to the big bill that everybody was up against, it shows that there are a lot of people with their eyes open and listening.
Yeah.
And they're ready to respond to this. So we're really looking for something that is risk-based, that will treat small-scale farmers in a different way than it's not a one-size-fits-all situation, and that we really come out with something that is actually going to help food safety and not promote some kind of agribusiness approach to business as usual.
Right, and I'd suggest to all of our audience, you can go to Steve Gilman's organization, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, or NOFA, N-O-F-A, and you can find them online, www.nofa.org, www.nofa.org, and if you want to give them a call or donate to their efforts, you can call them at 203-888-5146. That's 203-888-5146. 5146, or again, find them online at www.NOFA, N-O-F-A, stands for Northeast Organic Farming Association.org. You know, also in all your states, join your local state organic farming associations. We have one here in Maryland called MOFA, M-O-F-A, and you can find them online. Steve, I want to thank you for your long-lived engagement, passion, and leadership in this work, because it's obvious you are one of our senior leaders, and it's always a pleasure to share the airways with people like yourself.
Well, I thank you for this opportunity, and I really appreciate the work you're doing. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Again, follow up with Steve Gilman and the Northeast Organic Farming Association, or NOFA, at www.nofa.org. You can also call them at 203-888-5146. Coming up next, Tony Corbo, a senior lobbyist for Food and Water Watch, found at www.fwwatch.org, joins us to look at some other issues.
Alexandra's Restaurant at Turf Valley Resort in Ellicott City invites you to their spring beer dinner featuring Frederick, Maryland's Flying Dog Brewery. Join them on Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. and enjoy seven courses perfectly paired with brews from Flying Dog. Begin with a cheese reception and continue on to six more courses, including cheddar lager soup, flatbread pizza, arugula salad, risotto with sea bass and scallions, and New York strip. Then conclude your meal with an indulgent warm chocolate torte with caramel, all paired with specially selected Flying Dog brews. The seven-course spring beer dinner at Alexandra's at Turf Valley Resort is just $45 per person, and overnight packages are available. For reservations and information, call 410-480-2400 or visit www.turfvalleyresort.com. That's Alexandra's Spring Beer Dinner featuring Frederick's own Flying Dog Brewery on Saturday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. Call 410-480-2400 today.
Need money? Our listeners are discovering a simple way to earn money. I mean, quit your job money from home. Grow Your Income will help you run your own home business, and they're adding our listeners. They're connected to a multi-billion dollar company and one of the few work-at-home companies with an A-plus BBB rating. Want to earn life-changing money from home? Listen.
I wanted to see what everybody was talking about working from home and making this great income. I'm working my business now full-time, and it has completely changed my life. Being able to be at home, be in control of your schedule, and create an income for the family, but be able to do it right there with them. It's so rewarding.
Hey, listeners, Grow Your Income even provides a personal coach to help you succeed. Order your no-obligation info kit and pay only shipping. Plus, they're giving away $1,000 to someone just for checking them out. $1,000? Visit growyourincome.com. Growyourincome.com. That's growyourincome.com.
Passionate, healthful, dedicated. Do you embody these qualities? Employees at Lorien do. We're building the cream of the crop across Maryland in healthcare. We only want the best and most skilled healthcare professionals out there. So, do you think you can make the cut? Try us and see. Live Lorien. www.lorienhealth.com.
The views and opinions of the guests and hosts you hear are not necessarily those of the owners, management, or advertisers of Talk Radio 680. WCBM.
If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com.
You're listening to 21st Century Radio with guest host Zohara Hieronymus.
I jump up and down and hope you toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well. My vegetables cart off and sell. My vegetables I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Isn't it great? It's like a Secret Life of Plants song by the Beach Boys. little bit before Stevie Wonder's, I think, before Christopher Bird, our dear friend's book by that title, Secret Life of Plants. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Zoe Hieronymus, sitting in tonight for Dr. Bob a little earlier than the last Sunday of the month, which is our general practice. Joining us this portion of our program is Tony Corbo, whom I mentioned from Food and Water Watch. He is their legislative representative and senior lobbyist for the food campaigns of the organization. And Tony's going to continue with something we just touched on with Steve Gilman of the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And Tony, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So what I'd like to continue is what we only mentioned with Steve, and that's the bill that has received so much internet, hysterical, outrageous, red alerts from organization to organization. I can't tell you how many times I have gotten this email. Beware, the food police, H.R. 875, S-425, would nationalize farming, destroy organics, even attack your private garden. All right, so I am coming to you because I know and have a long relationship in following organizations like yours that you're really going to look at the details. So why don't you tell us what the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is these bills' numbers, is really about and what it would accomplish?
Well, H.R. 875 is one of several bills that the Congress is now considering to deal with the failed food safety regulatory system over at the Food and Drug Administration. H.R. 875 was a bill that a number of consumer groups had input in its development with the author, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut. And what that bill does is really restructure food safety within the Department of Health and Human Services. Creates a separate food safety administration, and taking the food part out from FDA and having the drug and medical device part continue as a separate entity within HHS. So that's the first thing that it does.
And
the
other thing, your organization and others feel this is a good thing.
It is a good thing because for the longest time, The food safety part of FDA has always been the stepchild. Most of the resources go to dealing with drug approvals and drug inspections or inspections of medical devices. And as a consequence, we're at a point now where FDA, if it's lucky, inspects the 150,000 food establishments that fall under its jurisdiction once every 5 to 10 years.
Wow, that's some sort of oversight. I wouldn't mind that in a job place.
Oh, sure.
That's pretty good workplace oversight.
Right, and the thing is that the FDA is responsible for the safety of about 80% of the food supply, as opposed to USDA. USDA does have food safety functions, and it regulates food safety for meat and poultry products, and there. Because of the way the statutes are written over at USDA, you have to have an inspector there every single day that a food processing plant is.
So it's like having one of those monitors on the airplanes, you know, the terrorist police. We now need them on the farms. Well, when you look at these kinds of, it's just kind of reckless legislation when it's not done in a practical fashion that, A, accomplishes your goal, which is food safety rather than policing. One of the things I recognize the bill does, because you all have done such a beautiful job on your website, and folks, you can go to Food and Water Watch at www.fwwatch.org, is that the bill does increase the inspection of food processing plants, and it does require farms to write a food safety plan. But the thing that I mentioned to our prior guest, Steve Gilman of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, is that it requires that imported food meet U.S. standards. And, you know, all the years I've worked in this business, I keep bringing that up. Why aren't foreign imports required to meet the same standard as our own, and yet they're given liberal sort of support and engagement to the point that they can dump their lettuce or whatever in our markets?
Well, and you're absolutely right. And one of the things that's happened, especially for the food products that FDA regulates, that over the last 5 years, the volume of imported food that falls under FDA jurisdiction has more than doubled. Over 80% of our seafood now that you eat, that you go to the store, is imported. Because of the various trade deals that it goes back to the Clinton administration.
Yeah, I fought it, by the way. When NAFTA and GATT were being proposed, I may have been one of the only broadcasters in America to read both of those treaties, which was an unbelievable thing, the GATT and the NAFTA agreement.
And so what's happened is that you're absolutely right. There are products that are being dumped on the U.S. market. I remember during the Clinton administration when they were trying to get NAFTA through, and they promised the Florida congressional delegation that was very worried about the dumping of Mexican fruits and vegetables on that state's agriculture system, and the Clinton administration promised up and down, no, that's not going to happen. Guess what? That's exactly what happened. Tomatoes, it decimated the tomato industry in Florida. Packing houses, went out of business, and so there's been this glut of imported tomatoes. And yet the because of the way the FDA has the way it doesn't regulate imported food. It's essentially stuck trying to monitor the safety of the food at the ports of entry. It has no relationship with Mexico saying you've got to meet the same standards.
Well, I remember that when we were talking about eliminating these carcinogenic, mutagenic, teratogenic things that aren't good for you in any shape or form out of our food supply in this country. And yet in other countries, A, there's no regulation, and they use things we've banned already decades ago.
That's right. And China, for example. China, in their aquaculture systems, they use banned antibiotics. They use pesticides and fungicides that are illegal in this country, and yet they are able to export their seafood products here. Now, luckily, a few years ago, FDA put out an import alert saying we're not going to take any more eel or catfish from China because of this. But the thing is that they really have no way of enforcing it.
I think as you point out, and anybody who's read these international trade agreements, when the U.S. government or a state for some reason throws up a red flag and says, we will not take, that injured party being the other nation and its producers can claim you're having, unnecessary regulations against us. It's just some sort of form of prejudice. And the penalty, if a court ruling is that we have to pay them for everything they couldn't import, or we have to accept the product.
Right.
I mean, this is lunacy to me.
It is. And one of the things that we've been working on, because of the system that USDA has on imports, they are able to restrict the imports coming in. But one of the things that the Bush administration attempted to do was to allow China to start exporting processed poultry products to the United States. Now, mm-hmm. our organization opposed that from the very beginning. Of all people, Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro put a provision in the last two appropriations bills governing USDA saying they cannot spend a dime to enforce any regulation that would permit China to send processed poultry to the United States. Because USDA's own inspectors, when they went over there, found filthy conditions. They did not meet the same standards as ours.
So having just touched on that arena, and I can tell this is a real issue that you all have focused on, and I'm so glad to know that, because I haven't really been that active as I was for so many, since I was 14 to about 49, that's all I did. But for the last decade, I've done some other things. So looking, though, coming back to the bigger issue and the fear Americans have of the federal government getting in the way not only of states' rights, but individual farming rights. Mm-hmm. How do you think the bills are shaking out?
Well, the thing is that all of the bills that have been introduced do have some requirements for farms to follow. One of the big things that I know that the FDA has been concerned about is the fact that whenever there is a recall, they don't have a traceability system in place where they can try to track the food down as quickly as possible, and so all of the bills will touch on farms to some extent. The 875 does require farms to come up with a food safety plan, but there's no inspection frequency like it is for processing facilities within the bill. So they may not get visited. Farmers may not get visited on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
As regular as they would as would a food processor, but the bill does also require product tracing. Now, one thing that 875 does do, it recognizes that not all farmers have access to the internet or have computers, and so it would allow paper record keeping. Some of the other bills require electronic record keeping. The FDA has made a case to the Congress that they would prefer that all farmers and all processing facilities keep electronic records.
Do you know offhand, and I don't, I know our last guest, Judith McGeary, would probably know. She's executive director of the Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
How many small farms there are versus in this country versus how many large agribusiness farms there are?
Well, the thing is that, it's one of those difficult things to figure out, what is a small family farm, and you will get, folks who owned, hundreds of thousands of acres saying it's a family farm as far as they're concerned because the family has owned it for,
right.
for generations.
Right. Versus the 10-acre farmette.
Yeah. And then if you look at the volume of sales, again,
mm-hmm.
you wind up getting different statistics. So it's one of those difficult things to really put your hands on.
But the reason I asked you is one of the things Steve kept pointing out is things are about a matter of scale and traceability to these big, enormous production houses that go across state borders immediately after distribution from their processing plants, that the smaller farmers are generally statewide or not even state, but county. And it's a different kind of scale of farming and a different impact on a community. And because it's organic, they're going to do their best, obviously, not to be a participant in anything that would harm anyone.
Right. And that's the thing. That's been one of the difficult balances to make in these food safety bills that have been introduced is that how to deal with the small farmer who is selling directly to the consumer, because if somebody gets sick from somebody eating something from a farm stand, they're going to know where to go back and find that farmer.
Maybe, but as we know with tracing, the problem is it takes many days, sometimes a week or so, to figure out where something came from at its purchase point. And by then, consumers often forget, as we saw with the salmonella outbreak, what they ate and when they ate it.
Right, and again, there's it's a very complicated system. This whole trace back thing is. Even with the peanut, the recent salmonella contamination,
right.
involving the Peanut Corporation of America, even though they were able to, the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control were able to finally say, okay, it's the Peanut Corporation of America back in January, they were still recalling products as recently as just 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. And here's an example of real malfeasance on the part of a corporation who knew there was a problem and did nothing about it.
That's right. And not only
and won't be prosecuted.
Not only didn't they do anything about it, they tried to hide it, and they knew they were putting out contaminated product into the marketplace, and the head of that company was more interested in making a buck than making sure that his product was safe.
Well, that's not a new tendency in the nation of greed.
Yes.
This can sometimes happen. Look, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I want to look at what you think citizens can do, because we've also heard rumors that the new head of the USDA, I believe that was what it was, is from Monsanto. And that there's a connection, is that it, with somebody from Monsanto and some new important part in agriculture? And, of course, for those of us like yourself who have fought genetically modified food, mm-hmm. that is not a good thing if it's true. So maybe you can rumor control for us on that one as
okay.
well. All
sure.
right. Our guest is Tony Corbo. He's senior lobbyist for Food and Water Watch. You can find them at www.fwwatch.org. Don't forget, all our guests are archived online and in our database. Go to www.21st21st.com.
Frank Looper here. Don't tell Patrick Sadie of Annapolis the housing market has tanked. Sadie got out of the corporate rat race and joined Real Estate Riches. In 1 year, he has bought several properties and exceeded his goal many times over.
In the last year, what was a goal of $100,000 really ended up becoming the reality of somewhere in the neighborhood of $650,000.
Sadie says it's a great time to buy, and with mentoring he gets from Real Estate Riches, little or no risk.
The thing that I was most impressed with is before I ever purchase a property, I know exactly, almost to the nickel, how much margin and how much profit there is in that property.
This is not traditional real estate buying and selling. It's real estate investing, using other people's money, and making a lot more than the 5 or 6% real estate agents make on sales.
If I can't realize 40%, it's not a good deal.
Reserve your place at a Real Estate Riches workshop near you by going to realestateriches.com or calling 443-631-3728.
I'm attorney Wilson P. McManus. You probably know me as an estate planning and elder law practitioner that helps families preserve their wealth through proper estate planning. You probably don't know that during my 22 years of practicing law, I've helped many Marylanders with all sorts of legal matters, including personal injury, workers' compensation, business formation and collections, divorce and child custody issues, and all types of motor vehicle matters, from speeding tickets to DWI. Do you have an attorney to turn to for your legal questions and advice? If not, consider me your family attorney by calling 410-828-0400. Write down this number for future reference. 410-828-0400. If you have a legal matter that you haven't been able to get resolved, call me. If you feel that your legal rights have been infringed in some way and you need to talk with an attorney, call me. I'm happy to speak with you at no charge to see if I can help you. And don't forget, I can also help you arrange your affairs so that if disability or death occurs, your loved ones will be protected. So remember, for all your legal needs, call attorney Wilson P. McManus at 410-828-0400. That's 410-828-0400.
For an hour of stimulating talk, join John Tegeler with Capital Conversation, Saturday nights at 7 p.m. His guests include entertainers, authors, sports figures, scientists, and so much more. Capital Conversation, Saturday at 7 on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Where was Jesus from ages 12 to 30? The New Testament is silent, but in India, tradition says young Jesus lived with both Hindus and Buddhists before beginning his ministry. Jesus in India, Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, The Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com. Or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
This is 21st Century Radio, and our guest host tonight is Zohara Hieronymus.
So we present our recipe and wish you well for
Don't you love the music our executive producer Laura Kortner picked out tonight? We've done the Beach Boys. Didn't we have a Beach Boys? Was it? Now, the Turtles. This is great. We had Paul McCartney and Wings. This is wonderful. The song's about food. It's amazing how much music there really is. Our guest, if you're just joining us in our theme on what's really going on legislatively about food safety, agricultural autonomy, and things that concern our food supply, Tony Corbo, who is senior lobbyist for Food and Water Watch, joins us. You can find them online at www.fwwatch.org. That's fwwatch.org. And you can call them at 202-683-2500. That's 202-683-2500. So I want to come, Tony, back to another rumor in that terrible rumor mill, and like growing tomatoes in your closet because the federal government's not going to let you grow them anymore in your backyard, except for the First Lady. Thank God for the new Victory Gardens. I love them. Anyway, is the notion that a former attorney of Monsanto, Michael Taylor, is going to become the head of the USDA, is it? And therefore, we're not going to have any natural seed anymore. We're only going to get genetically modified organisms and seed.
Yeah, before I answer that, our website is actually Food and Water Watch. You just spell it out, .org.
Oh, okay.
I just realized.
Thank you so much. It's okay. Food and Water. Oh, I like that. That's easier to remember.
Yeah.
Foodandwaterwatch.org. Thank you for correcting that. Foodandwaterwatch.org.
Now, as far as Mike Taylor. Yeah, Mike Taylor, kind of an interesting fellow. We've done battle with him in the past. He served during the Clinton administration, first as the administrator of the Food Safety and Inspection Service, and that's the entity within USDA that regulates food safety for meat and poultry products.
And they did a great job on the Tyson Farms in Maryland.
Yeah.
It's called "We're Not Looking Because You're a Big Contributor."
Yeah, and then, except they only deal with the slaughterhouses and the food processors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are problems there too. And then he went to work for the FDA as an associate commissioner. And then soon after that, he went to work for Monsanto as an attorney.
How lovely.
And
how glad we are.
And he's made a return engagement where he served on the transition team for the Obama administration, for USDA, and it's been rumored that the president announced a few weeks ago that he was creating a food safety working group within the White House, and it's been rumored that Mike Taylor would be directing that operation, although it has not happened yet.
But I think for those who may not remember all the shows we did on irradiated food and genetically
right.
modified food, explain to our audience Monsanto's role and why so many of us are concerned about this. I mean, this is something to be concerned about.
Well, they're big promoters of genetically modified foods. As a matter of fact, when Mike Taylor was at FDA, he was the one who rendered the opinion that using RBGH for cows was okay, and that it didn't have to be labeled.
The
growth hormone,
right? Which has made some children so sick. Boys grow breasts, and girls don't menstruate. I mean, it's really great.
Yeah. And so while he was there, he rendered the opinion that it didn't have to, no food had to be labeled with cows who were injected with this. And so, you know, right now we're in the middle of a campaign to try to have the school districts, you know, opt out of buying milk that
mm-hmm.
contains this growth hormone,
which they should.
Yeah.
As well as all the antibiotics and steroids and everything else that actually are in what we call milk, but it's really not milk. It's something that came from a cow initially.
Right.
But by the time you drink it, it ain't milk. Anyway, so I want to come back, though, to the bigger picture of what you think people should be focused on, because there are these other issues, you know, still irradiated food and still carbon monoxide treatment of irradiated food to make it look fresh. I mean, there's a lot of poisonous practices going on. But because you are such a broad engager, I would like just to leave a few moments for water, because I remember all the years I covered this, and I did this for, you know, almost 30 years on radio, on and off, as a guest for many years and then a host, and as an activist myself since 14 to about the age of 49 or 50. And water was a big concern of mine, and my big concern was the privatization of our water supply. What has happened along those lines?
Well, I don't work on that issue as much as I do on the food part,
right.
But we do have a separate division within Food and Water Watch that has been fighting global privatization efforts globally.
I mean,
there are a number of companies, you know, Nestle. You have companies out of Great Britain, out of Germany, that have been attempting to privatize water systems. All across the world,
yeah,
and you know, and because of our wonderful, you know, trade agreements, it we have to allow some of those those companies, those foreign companies, to come into the United States to bid on water systems here within
our
country.
China gets the Panama Canal, and Pepsi Corporation out of China gets Lake Michigan. I mean, the one about China and Panama Canal is true. The other I made up. But it shows you how outrageous our Congress has been in protecting United States citizens, the citizens of the states, from foreign interference and foreign intrusion in terms of our commerce. And we're now at a point in globalization where we will have economic wars. They don't necessarily have to be militarized with bullets. And so when you then, coming back, though, to the food issues, food safety, the DeLauro bill, and the many others, which Judith McGreery has done a great summarization of, are there any right now that you say to everybody in the listening audience, call your representative and senator, tell them to support it, call them, tell them not to support it?
Well, the thing is that we're still advocating the DeLauro bill, H.R. 875, but Congresswoman DeLauro has reached out. Now, you had Steve Gilman on before me, and Steve and a number of other people have provided some technical input into Congresswoman DeLauro's office to try to clarify some of the sections of her bill that have caused some confusion and raised some concerns, and so we're still advocating that bill. Another bill, the bill that's probably on the House side that is going to move is going to be probably the main vehicle is H.R. 759, which is the bill that was introduced by Congressman Dingell from Michigan. Now that bill covers all of FDA. It covers the drug side, it covers the medical device, and it also has a food component.
H.R. 759. Don't you love it when they combine, apples, oranges, and your father's shoes?
Yeah,
all in what they're going to take care of.
Right. And so that bill, one of the concerns that we always had with that bill is that it would, and this was at the prompting of the Bush FDA, the Bush FDA wanted to allow private third-party inspections to substitute for
government inspection. This is like professional jurymen. That's another kind of outrageous proposal.
And so we've always been concerned about that aspect of the Dingell bill, and we're mm-hmm. hoping that gets changed. The other thing that the Dingell bill does is instead of permitting instead of having the FDA being funded entirely by taxpayer dollars, they want to charge a fee to food processors to pay mm-hmm. for the
inspectors
mm-hmm. for the inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
And that could lead to mischief. They've had problems
for sure. They can buy them off.
Yeah, and
I mean bribery is a very well practiced trade worldwide.
Right. And so that bill, and that bill also requires electronic record keeping to do traceback. So mm-hmm. there are some concerns. I know that his staff is trying to work up a modified bill. We'll see what happens. But we've had some concerns with that. The bill on the Senate side is Senate S-510 has been introduced by
Durbin of Illinois, right?
And he has bipartisan support for that because
that's the FDA Food Safety and Modernization Act,
right? And mm-hmm. that bill does have bipartisan support, and one of the reasons it has bipartisan support is that it does not, for example, it still perpetuates this notion that the FDA can only look at a company's records unless there is a food emergency. So after something already happens, somebody dies,
then they can look.
Then they can.
When the patient is dead, we can look at the doctor's records.
Right.
Look, we're gonna run out of time, and I want to thank you, Tony, for Food and Water Watch's work. It's obvious you all are really on top of just about everything that I have always worked on, and I'm glad to sort of come back into the mix and the milieu of all your wonderful action. And I want to encourage our audience to find you online at www.foodandwaterwatch.org. That's foodandwaterwatch.org. And I look forward to another conversation with you when we can follow up before there's any voting.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your work.
Sure. It's a pleasure. You know, all of us, we just keep at it, and it's so interesting to be silver-haired and to see so many young people now doing the work. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you very much for having me on this evening.
You're welcome. Stay tuned for more on 21st Century Radio. We'll be right back. And again, all our guests and the information about their organizations are online at www.21stcenturyradio.org.
Most powerful names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News, I'm Brad Wheelis. We're still weeks away from the results of the stress test on big banks.